Well, let's see. We're ending this week. We're ending the chapter that we've been on ever since the beginning of the program. And if you look at the chapter as a whole, and I actually, hold on one moment, let me get my book out. Okay, if you look at the chapter as a whole, I think it's fair to say that this chapter gives a kind of a theoretical framework, and then in the next chapter or two, there is more of an experiential dimension. Now, we have been working with an experiential dimension from the beginning, at least I've encouraged people to, and the first part of that is exercise 16 from the book, Space, Time, and Knowledge on the Conventional Level. And in the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about the exercise on page 144, which basically says, see if you can stay with the present without referencing it or without locating it in a past, present, future nexus. And the other exercise, which we haven't really talked about yet, is the exercise on feeding time back into time. And I have a note here from someone saying that they'd like to hear a little more about that. Well, that's good because we will try to work with that. Let me first ask those of you who are live and available. Let me ask if anybody would like to say anything about the practice of exercise 16, space, time, and knowledge on the conventional level. Anybody want to comment on how that's been going or what you've noticed or how it fits in with the reading? Okay. Yeah, sure. Well, okay, so that's very interesting, that whole orientation. You know, we say, okay, we do the practice, it's not easy to do, and you what you become aware of is that you're very stuck. That was your word. That's a on one level, that's a legitimate conclusion. And it is difficult to do that practice, and in a little bit, I want us to do the practice on page 144, and you know many of the same considerations I think apply. It may be that what you notice when you do that practice is how you always set up the same situation. You always end up with the conviction that you are the one who is doing this, and you are the one who is not doing it, and you are the one who can feel proud about doing it or discouraged about not doing it. All of those very typical patterns that we're familiar with are what you're likely to find in your practice. And you said, you know, Sudaba, you said with a lot of effort you can, you know, you can stay with it for a little while and then you come back out. I think that that's actually very important in terms of what TSK is trying to do. You know, one of the things that's come up a couple of times in our readings in the last couple of weeks is there are places in the reading where Rinpoche says, you know, what we're doing here is similar to the kinds of things that meditative traditions aim to do. And I think that I think what he is saying, I'm not sure he says it in exactly these terms, but I think that what he's saying is that one of the reasons that it's difficult is because if we're doing it in the terms that a meditative practice might suggest, we stay committed to a fundamental underlying structure. And in terms of time, that structure is the past, present, future structure. And the suggestion is that in TSK, we can challenge that underlying structure, and then things become very different. And at least in theory, I have to qualify that in a moment, but at least in theory, they become a lot easier. Now, my qualification is that maybe the sense in which they become easier is that we stop making a very strong distinction or discrimination between saying, now I'm doing it the right way, and now I'm no longer able to do it. And of course, in meditation practice, meditation traditions, they also say, you know, don't make those distinctions. Here, the sense of not making the distinction, I think, has something to do with this sense that everything is given by time, everything is presented by space. If, you know, the exercise 16 is about time and space and knowledge, but we're focusing on time, so we can say everything is given by time. And if what's given is our distraction, our being pulled away, are being committed to the past, present, future structure, well, fine. That's what time presents. I'm always a little uncomfortable using this kind of TSK jargon where you say time presents, you know. But really, we're trying to put in place an alternative to the self as the one at the center of everything. And so we need a different vocabulary. So that's one that the TSK books make available. We say time is presenting. So that's a very long comment, Sudaban, on your question, or your report, really, about your experience. And I'm not sure that in the end it's very helpful, because you still find yourself saying, well, it's difficult to do this practice. And I guess all that I'm suggesting is that if you take seriously this kind of deconstruction of the usual past, present, future structure, then even the difficulty in doing the practice becomes doing the practice.
And does that mean I will feed time back to time, even the difficulty is presented?
Well, I think that that's actually right, and that's something I want to explore today. I do want to have us do some practice here in the phone call today. And the second part of it will be focusing on feeding time back into time. And what that means as a practical matter, at least one way of doing it, and of course, you know, any of these practices can be done in a lot of different ways. But as a practical matter, it seems to me that what that means is that when you are aware of the way in which you set up the same old patterns over and over again, and if there is a real felt sense that that's what time is presenting, then yes, you can feed that back into the practice. And that is feeding time into time. But let's move in that direction. Let's do it by starting with the exercise which is not given as a formal exercise, but I've kind of pulled it out of the text, the exercise on page 144. But I actually want to give a little more time to practice today, and that means I want to do a kind of a warm-up to that exercise. So on page 144, it says, right in the middle of the page, it says, we can concentrate on attending to what is immediately present without locating it in a before-after causal nexus. And then he goes on to say that's related to meditation practice. So that's the practice we're going to do. But before we do that, I'd like to have us focus on something that we all know, but it's good to focus on. And that is how much of the time we spend, how much of our experience is takes place in the past or the future. Now, there's a kind of a contradiction in saying that, because in a certain sense, and in a very fundamental sense, you can say, well, our experience takes place in the present. But what I'm talking about is the content of the experience. So when we stop and look at our experience, if we were just doing it in kind of a casual way, you know, let's say you just sat down sometime this afternoon and watched what was going on with your thoughts and concerns and emotions and so on, without trying to control them in any way, you'd find that you were a lot of the time, probably, engaged in memories and anticipations, planning things for the future, remembering things from the past, expecting, hoping, regretting, and so on. All these things that involve the past and the future. That's our kind of ordinary way of being. Now, if we do it in the present, you know, in this present situation, which I'm going to ask us to do in a moment, because we're kind of focused in on this, we may not just drift off into the past and the future the way we ordinarily would. So what we need to look for is something more subtle. So for instance, if we say, okay, now let's look at our experience, and we start looking at our present experience, what we want to be looking for is a kind of a subtle way in which that experience is linked to a future or a past. So let's say you look at your experience and there's a little tone to it of, you know, what am I going to be able to report if when we're done, for instance? Or am I doing this the same way I did it the last time I tried? That's what I mean by a subtle dimension of past and future that goes along with our present experience. So that's what I'd like us to look at. Is that reasonably clear what we might, what we're going to try? Okay, let's try
it
a couple. It is. Somebody said yes. Good, good. Does anybody want to say no? Anybody want to ask a question? No. Okay, so let's try this for a couple of minutes. So looking at the past and future nexus into which we place every present moment. Not trying to do anything about it, just looking at it. Okay, let's do that. I'm going to turn off the video so that I'm not a distraction. Okay, let's stop there. So, was the description that I gave an accurate one? What did you notice? I mean, the suggestion that there is this past and future dimension or nexus. What did you notice?
It seemed like every now had its own past and its own future contained within it.
Okay, so this is Hayward. So every now has its own past and future. Can you give an example?
Whenever I had an experience of staying now, it was clear that that particular moment was a point that had a future and a past, like mirrors on both sides.
So were they futures and past in the sense of a reference? Like, they referred back to something and forward to something? Is that an accurate description, or what would you
It
say?
was like it gave it a sense of being located, gave it location.
Okay.
Became a knowing point that was located.
Okay. And so do you think that sense of location is then related to a sense of self as the one that's located? It's a little deep.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay. Anybody else?
This is Michael.
Mm-hmm.
I find I can't break through that nexus, but if I think of the future, like Jack's going to ask if I have anything to say, I can be there looking back, sitting in front of my computer with my eyes closed, and I can sort of get a foothold somewhere else, and then I'm not so stuck in one point. And a kind of bridge is made from, like, the mind can be in two places at once almost.
Okay, well, that's interesting. So you're saying there's a positive dimension, if I understand correctly, that your experience is spread out, not so limited. Is that right?
Right, and even if it seems like it's on a linear timeline, it's evocative of their all time being fed by something more dynamic. I'm not stuck in one point.
Okay, so it's a kind of a reminder or a way of experiencing more of the dynamic of time, to be aware of that. Well, that's
Feels like
actually
that.
So that's kind of related to the idea of feeding time into time. It's a way of getting to the dynamic of time, and we're going to go there in pretty soon. Okay, well, now if you have some sense of that, we're going to go back and do the same thing. But this time we'll try to actually do the exercise. So the exercise says, to go back to it, just this sentence, it says, attend to what is immediately present without locating it in a before-after causal nexus. So we've been saying, okay, there is that nexus. Let's see what happens if we try not to locate it, or if we try to not locate it, or since trying is already a kind of a temporal dynamic of its own, let's just see what happens. Is it possible to experience without locating in a causal past-future nexus? Let's try that for a couple of minutes. Okay, let's stop there. I laugh because I'm used to ringing a bell when a meditation is over. Here I send my video when the meditation is over. Okay, what did you notice in that session? And those of you who don't have sound, there's at least a couple of you, you can chat if you like. That's up to you. If you do, I'll pass on your comments or refer to them. Okay, anybody want to say anything about that? Well, I'll say something, and that is that it seemed to me the only possibility for not referring experience to a past and a future, the only one that made sense to me was to go into the senses, to go into hearing and seeing, basically. Okay, so we've got a couple of good chat comments. So I'm just that was my comment. Let's take a look at a couple of these others. So Pat, you're just finishing up the retreat, right? So it's actually pretty similar. You go to the feelings and sensations in the body, and when thoughts come up, you just go back into the body. So there's the body, there's the feelings and sensations in the body, there's the feelings and sensations. Well, the perceptions, let's say, of the world. And Ari says, Kaz, who's sitting in with Ari, is, let's see, we're both commenting. Okay. A release of tension, a sense of not knowing, that's very interesting, and an open and comfortable bliss. Good. So we're getting a few more comments by chat, and that's helpful. So let me encourage everybody. Okay. So Lynn says, verbiness relaxes, but nowiness remains. I like that. Now, is verbiness, Lynn, is that as in verb as in action, or verb as in verbal? Verb as in action. Okay. But nowiness remains. I like that. Verb is in action. Okay. And I think David says boundaries expanding. Well, that's very interesting. So people, Michael, you brought up the suggestion, the possibility that when you're connected to past and future, it's a way of also connecting to the dynamic of time because you're not stuck in a particular location. But here, several of these comments seem to refer to a kind of a dynamic or, no verbiness, but plenty of nowiness. Not as strong a sense of boundaries, a kind of a relaxed quality, even if there's some doing involved. All of those may be related to the dynamic of time. I'm not insisting on that, but it may be. Okay, anybody want to add anything to that?
Future, it's Hayward. When I didn't attend to the future or the past, I had a sense of a certain verticality of time. When time stopped flowing from past to present to future, and then there was this felt like a verticality rather than it was a different directionality or upward flash. That idea of being flashed out from above made more experiential sense.
Okay, so flashing, that's interesting. Kind of a vertical flashing. Okay. And Pat adds this idea of there's kind of a positive feeling and an expansive feeling. Those are definitely some of the senses we're talking about here. I don't know if that relates to verticality, but it's something to look at. Well, let's try just one more exercise, and that is to go directly now to this idea of feeding time into time. So there'd be a couple of ways to do that, it seems to me. One is when you do notice a sense that you're placing or situating your present experience in a past and future nexus, let that be an indication of the dynamic of time and feed that sense of locatedness back into the temporality of the experience. And the other possibility is if you're in the present and you have a sense of this expansiveness that you've been descri that several people have described, expansiveness or a stronger sense of now or a kind of relaxation or a flow of feeling, whatever it is that you're experiencing, let that be the dimension that you feed back into time. And just to look at the description, it's on page 149, and it says, feeding time into time, stimulating and accelerating it, getting more resultant energy, and again putting that back into time. And I mentioned in the guidance this week or last that the idea of accelerating it might seem as though you get out of balance. I don't think it's necessarily a kind of a speeding up in that sense, but it's a connecting in to the dynamic and letting that get stronger. That's maybe, I won't try to describe it any more than that. I mean, I can't. It's not that I'm holding something back. I just don't have a better description. Okay, so let's do the same practice. This time when we're aware of time, however we're aware of it, feeding that dynamic of time back into time. Let's see what that does. Okay? We'll go. Okay, let's stop there. Comments? Anything you noticed that was interesting? Either saying or chatting?
Noticed something that was interesting to me, like giving away things on the periphery, like temporal associations or feelings. It worked better to give away a nice flowing feeling of relaxation than an anxious feeling, because it was more worth sharing that. And then sharing it with time was like giving away the edges. Have to hem in and imprison in a way.
Okay, so you use this phrase giving away. I'm not sure I understand. Can you say a little more?
Well, feeding time into time, you're
Okay.
relinquishing,
I
and
see.
then the giving is like I'm giving it to another realm than the one I usually live in,
I
that
see.
maybe is the founding realm of my experience.
Okay, that's interesting. So feeding it is kind of like taking this little morsel of time and feeding it to the founding realm of your experience. Is that? I like that. Okay. Anybody else? Okay, let's point to a couple of things in the chat. Okay, so Bruce says converting everything into dynamism, liquid pouring into liquid. And Pat says that it reminds her of the readout, that everything is in the readout. That's great. And Lynn says Soylent Greeny, which that's people are very interested in this feeding metaphor, right? This okay, feeding yourself into feeding your own experience into time, I guess. So there is a question about, so Pat asked, well, but wait, how do you do this? How do you feed time? Well, I think the answer is you just try, you see what happens. I will add that it seemed to me that there were, you know, we had talked about two different dimensions. I had talked about two different dimensions. And it seems to me that there was a sense of both of those dimensions. One was a kind of a vibrancy, you know, and Rinpoche talks in the reading we had about a flickering quality of time, that feeding time into time, intensifying that, seemed to go more in the direction of this, you know, very charged, very kind of bright quality. That was one dimension. The other dimension that I noticed was when the focus was more on the past, present, future structure and trying to feed that in, I've kind of lost my experience of it now. At one point I thought, oh, this is different. This is interesting because it's quite different. But now I've lost what the experience was. Does anybody else want to say anything about that? Did I miss any more chats? No new chats. Okay. Okay, well, the reason that I wanted to focus a lot on practice this time is it seemed like a good way to explore it, explore the reading. It seems to me that, you know, we had a very short reading this time. And the single term in the reading is that little statement, that little two-line statement on page 159, which he calls a celebratory statement, intimacy is. And the connection to be made, I think, is does this feeding time into time, does that lead us into a kind of intimacy? That's the question that I would ask and that I would invite you to ask in the next few in the next week as we practice. You know, if you can find time to continue with this, I think that would be great to do some of these practices. And we will move on now into the next chapter, where the issue of practice, the possibilities for practice, let's say, expand more. So that's it for this week, and we'll connect again We'll feed time into time. Next week, say at the same time. See you then.